morning. I'm Rebecca Fowler. I'm representing the Eustace family and Applied Systems in an appeal from the tax court that denied the tax, research and experimentation tax credit for the years 1990, 1991, and 1992 for the development of software. This is a case of first impression for this court. Although the court has previously reviewed the research credit in the context of internal use software, this is the first case to be reviewed by the court in the context of commercial software. And we believe there is a distinct difference between those two contexts. Initially, I'd like to start with where the tax court started. It would appear on the first reading of that opinion, and maybe even the second and third reading of that opinion, that the court determined that this was a substantiation test. That is, that Applied Systems failed to establish and substantiate the expenses that they took. However, during the development of this case and through the trial and the post-trial briefing, substantiation of the expenses was never really an issue. It has always been agreed that what work was performed, who performed that work, and how much was paid to those employees to perform that work. What the tax court really meant was that Applied Systems failed to demonstrate that the work that they performed satisfied the requirements of the credit. There are four elements of the research credit. That is, that the expenses have to have qualified for the Section 174 deduction. The expenses had to have been incurred in the discovery of technological information, and that information was to be used in the development of a new or improved product, and that the information was discovered using a process of experimentation. Those are the four requirements for any of the research credit deductions, and it was stipulated in this case that Applied Systems satisfied the requirements of the 174 deduction and satisfied the requirement that they were discovering this information in an attempt to develop new and improved products. What is at issue is the discovery test, the discovery of technological information test, and the process of experimentation test. As I said, this court has previously reviewed two cases where the research credit was claimed in the context of internal use software. The service in their briefs argues that Applied Systems virtually ignores the controlling precedent in this circuit. Although we believe that the test that this court may have applied when reviewing the internal use software, we do not believe that those tests as articulated in those opinions is controlling precedent in this case, because it is a commercial software case rather than an internal use software case. What has happened in those previous cases is that the court took the additional requirements for qualifying for the credit for internal use software and blended them into the four basic tests that are required to claim the credit for any type of
counsel,
software.
I'm puzzled. What is it in the statute that makes anything turn on whether the software is used internally or sold to strangers?
Well, because there are additional requirements for internal use software. If you develop software for your internal use, you are required to meet three additional requirements that commercial software is not required to meet, and those requirements are innovation and technical risk.
What is it in the statute that makes the application of the process of experimentation requirement turn on whether you sell the software or not?
Well, what it turns on is whether or not there's technical risk in developing the software. If you have internal use software, there must be some technical risk involved in the development of the software. If you're developing commercial software, that technical risk is not an element of the process of experimentation.
The ground on which this case was decided was principally the process of experimentation ground. Is there any difference for that statutory criterion that depends on whether you sell the software?
Yes, there is, because in internal use software, your process of experimentation has to take into consideration that there is some technical risk in developing the product. There is no technical risk requirement for commercial software. The technical risk is clearly delineated in the legislative history under internal use software.
Now, I keep asking what in the statute Is there anything in the statute that turns on this?
In the statute?
Yeah.
It does articulate the three additional requirements for internal use software. I mean, those were not in play here because this is not internal use software, and so that hasn't been fully developed in the trial of this case, but the statute and all regulations and legislative history and everything else clearly depends on this technical feasibility element for internal use software, and it's not there for commercial software. The legislative history of the statute clearly requires uncertainty, and it requires uncertainty with respect to internal use software. It requires uncertainty with respect to commercially developed software. However, the legislative history, which is not contradicted in any way by the statute itself,
there was an old crack that Justice Frankfurter made that said, when the legislative history is unclear, we will turn to the text of the statute. But the number of justices currently sitting on the Supreme Court who thinks that that's a suitable way of interpretation is zero. The fact that the legislative history is not contradicted by anything, that and $1.50 will get you a cup of coffee.
I appreciate that, Your Honor, but the statute, the legislative history is quite clear.
The question is not the legislative history. Was it memorialized in the statute itself, the history?
I believe it was. I believe it's clearly reflected there in all aspects of the statute because it gives you three additional requirements for internal use software that are not requirements for commercial software. Then that risk, that technical feasibility risk, is not in the test for commercial software. And as I said, the legislative history clearly, and the statute clearly, says that there must be some uncertainty in the development of the product in order to get the credit. That uncertainty can be in several different areas. It can be in the capability of developing the new product, the method of developing the new product, or the appropriate design of the new product. And although the service in this case argues that there was no technical risk involved in the development of the Applied Systems product, therefore there was no uncertainty about the capability of developing the product, there was certainly, uncontradicted in the record of this case, uncertainty about the appropriate design of the product or the method of achieving that result. Therefore, Applied Systems did satisfy the process of experimentation test.
Does uncertainty mean that it's not a sure thing? What is uncertainty? You say when it certainly says uncertain, that's sort of a...
The statute says if you've got a goal of developing a new product and you know how you're going to get there, there's no uncertainty at all, and therefore you don't qualify for the credit because you haven't had to use a process of experimentation. If you knew up front where you were going and how you're going to get there, there's no process of experimentation and therefore no research and no eligibility for the credit. There has to be some uncertainty, and that uncertainty can be in any number of areas.
So a trial and error process, is that evidence of uncertainty, if there are some errors along the way?
Well, there's a difference between trial and error and some errors along the way. There's always some errors along the way, particularly in the development of software, that have to be worked out. But whether you call it trial and error or a process of experimentation...
What is uncertainty? I'm just trying to explore what uncertainty is.
Uncertainty is not knowing. If you're uncertain about the technical feasibility of your project, you don't know if you can actually achieve the result you want or not. If you are uncertain about the design of the project, you think that product can be developed, but you're not sure exactly how you're going to get there. So uncertainty is not knowing for certain.
That sounds fair.
And the record in this case is very, very clear that in the work that Applied Systems performed in 1992, they were uncertain as to how they, when they started down the path of developing their new products, they were uncertain as to how they were going to achieve those products. They were uncertain in the design. The transcript of the trial is in many places, has testimony from the employees of Applied Systems who developed these new products that they didn't know how they were going to get there when they started out. They had an idea in mind. Their first idea never worked. They always had to go back to the drawing board. And one of the things that is relevant in the development of computer software during this period that may not be relevant for the many other industries that are entitled to the credit is the technical specifications of personal computers that were available in 1990, 1991, and 1992. Today, you could go down to Best Buy and buy all the memory you want for your computer. You couldn't do that in 1990, 1991, and 1992. So while Applied Systems and all these other software...
You could buy all the memory you wanted.
Well, if you had a pocket full of money.
But if you were trying to use the PC operating system, it just wouldn't recognize more than 640K of it. Bill Gates' famous dictum, no one could ever use more than 640K of memory.
Well, people believed that more back in 1990 than they do today, perhaps.
I still believe it, so.
At any rate, the biggest challenge for all software developers during this time period was to continue to enhance their products, to add more capability and functionality to their products, more options for their customers, and yet keep it within the memory constraints of the personal computers available at that time and keep it running quickly so that the functions could be performed quickly. If you didn't have the speed, then you might as well be doing it manually.
You're into your rebuttal time, you know that.
Oh, excuse me.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Heller. Mr. Morrison.
May it please the court, my name is Richard Morrison for the United States. As Ms. Bauer stated, the issue in this case is whether the computer programming done by Applied Systems in the 1990, 1991, and 1992 tax years qualifies for the research. The issue is not about whether the taxpayer is entitled to a deduction for this research, but whether in addition to the deduction, it's entitled to a research credit, which under Section 41 of the Code is allowed for quote-unquote qualified research. The taxpayer is not entitled to the credit here. The computer programming at issue does not constitute qualified research as required by Section 41 for two reasons. First, the programming activities do not satisfy the so-called discovery test, which requires that research be undertaken for the purpose of discovering information which is technological in nature, to quote the code. And second, the activities do not constitute experimentation, meaning that substantially all of the activities of the research do not constitute elements of a process of experimentation. Starting on that second test, process of experimentation, that phrase is in the code, and it's already been defined by this court in United Stationers, a case decided in 1998, to mean that qualifying research must have significant design uncertainty from its outset. And in United Stationers, that court held that software programs written by a wholesale stationery company did not constitute a process of experimentation because there was no technical uncertainty that the software could not do what the taxpayer wanted it to do. The Seventh Circuit in the United Stationers recognized that computer programming, like the programming at issue here with this taxpayer, Applied Systems, involves debugging the computer program. But this is not a process of experimentation, said this court. A process of experimentation involves something more than simply debugging a program. In this case, the tax court found below that the computer programming done by Applied Systems met neither the discovery nor the experimentation tests. Both tests, I would point out, are applicable to both internal use software and software for commercial sale, as is borne out by the plain language of the code. With respect to the experimentation test first, the tax court held, nor did Applied Systems conduct a process of experimentation aimed at eliminating uncertainty about the technical ability to develop the software. Because this standard used by the lower court, the tax court, was the same standard used by the Seventh Circuit in United Stationers, the lower court applied the correct legal standard. And the question here is only whether the tax court's factual finding was correct. It found that the activities were not experimentation. The standard of review for deciding whether a factual finding is incorrect is the clearly erroneous standard of review. This was a standard used by this court in the LICOR case, a similar computer programming case. But the tax court's finding was not clearly erroneous. The record showed that Applied Systems merely used routine computer programming methods. In some cases, it simply adapted software purchased from other parties. And nowhere in their record did they demonstrate that there was any doubt that Applied Systems could not achieve the goals it thought.
What is the commissioner's view about the right definition of a process of experimentation?
This court in the United States has held that
I didn't ask you to recite back what we have said. I asked, what is the commissioner's view?
That is the commissioner's. That is the government's litigating position in this case.
I didn't ask what the government's litigating position was in this case. I asked, what is the commissioner's view about the meaning of the phrase process of experimentation? It's defined, I gather, in pending regulations that are about to be issued.
Yes.
And what is that definition?
Yes, Your Honor. The proposed regulation provide that there's no experimentation if the capability and method of achieving the desired result and the appropriate design of the desired result are readily discernible and applicable as of the beginning of the taxpayer's research activities.
Now, is there any definition of what a process of experimentation is, as opposed to a series of statements about what a process of experimentation is not? I know a lot of things that are not a process of experimentation. I'm interested in what the phrase really means, or at least what the commissioner's view is of what it really means.
There is a process of experimentation if there is uncertainty as to the method for achieving the result the taxpayer wishes to achieve.
And there's uncertainty about a lot of things. I'm uncertain about what to write in a draft opinion. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I'm engaged in a process of experimentation. Right? Is there some
Correct.
Definition that will help us separate a process of experimentation from all instances of uncertainty? I don't know what route to drive to get to my destination, but I'm not engaged in a process of experimentation. I'm pretty confident.
Well, beyond the uncertainty test, the legislative history and the proposed regulations say a process of experimentation does not include any activities to select among
I think the commissioner has not taken a position on that question. Or if he has, you have not made yourself aware of it. It has not come to your attention.
The commissioner's position is
there anything in the regulation or in the draft regulation that defines what experimentation is, as opposed to giving examples of what the commissioner thinks it is not?
There is a positive statement in the proposed regulation.
Okay, so what is it?
Let me read it.
Okay.
Proposed or existing?
Yeah, they're proposed regulations. They haven't been made final yet.
But at least they would enunciate the commissioner's position.
Mm-hmm. I hope.
But we're saying the controlling law is the United Stationer's definition, which is an uncertainty test.
What's the commissioner saying?
That won't be what the commissioner is saying as soon as these regulations issue. It's not what the Tenth Circuit says, because the Tenth Circuit has disapproved our position in LICOR and United Stationers. The Supreme Court may have yet another view. That's one reason why we might want to figure out what the options are. Anyway, what
the proposed regulation says, for the purpose of Section 41D, a process of experimentation is a process designed to evaluate one or more alternatives to achieve a result where the capability and the method of achieving that result or the appropriate design of that result is uncertain as of the beginning of the taxpayer's research activities. The regulations continue to set forth the negative statements I've already cited. Now, in terms of sheer words, this could be argued to be different than this court's decision in United States.
Well,
but
no,
it's still an uncertainty
to be different.
Test.
It seems to me entirely vapid. Vapid tests aren't different from other things. They just don't have any content.
It uses the word uncertainty. It continues to say that experimentation It's a selection of alternatives where the alternatives are not readily discernible and applicable.
It's so subjective. It just, it's very...
Won't distinguish it from my trying to figure out how to drive.
It may be a... However vague the standard is, the tax court found that the activities did not constitute a process of experimentation. The Tenth Circuit in Task, which Judge Easterbrook, Your Honor, cited, stated that a process of experimentation does not exist if the result, if the taxpayer can be certain that its result can be achieved. The taxpayer does not meet that standard. But more importantly, it doesn't meet the United Stationer standard, and the tax court's finding is entitled to be upheld unless it is clearly erroneous. In addition, the tax court found that the taxpayer could practically satisfy no standard for what experimentation is. It said that the state of the record was insufficient. To quote the tax court opinion, the petitioner's reconstruction of qualifying expenses was unreliable, inaccurate, incomplete, and wholly insufficient to establish what the workers did and whether the expenses qualify for the research credit. Even the taxpayer's own evidence, the tax court found, pointed to the fact that the taxpayer was engaged in routine computer programming techniques. One of the taxpayer's head programmers testified he could immediately know whether something could be made to work or whether it just wouldn't work. And the taxpayer's expert witness testified, it's hard for me to think about writing each of these programs as constituting research. The tax court opinion says, the testimony of petitioner's witnesses further supports our conclusion that work performed does not qualify for the research credit. So I think in terms of experimentation, the experimentation test set forth by this court in United Stationers and the proposed regulations, which are merely proposed, they are not, there's no reason to think that they would control this case, show that the taxpayer failed to meet the definition.
What's their status, by the way? How long have they been out for comment?
They were proposed December 26, 2001.
So they could be issued any time. It's kind of a long development cycle, one might think.
Gestation period, I think is what we call
it. Yes. They could come out. They could come out in a different form.
Mm-hmm.
Than they are in now.
Well, you know, the tax credit is supposed to be some sort of an incentive to explore maybe the unknown, I guess, and then you come up with, someone comes up with new and innovative things, which I frankly can't articulate what goes on in this technology industry and the rapidity of which it takes place. Something that might be uncertain one month is obvious the next. The way I see it, I mean, it's incredibly fast. It's not one of these slowly developing things. And we go back to 1990, 91, and 92. It's like ancient history in this realm. And that, I guess that to put it in to frame it and say what is uncertain then and what someone does to invest their time and money in, whether it's something that is just a process that's not uncertain, I mean, I'm sort of at sea here.
Well, the United States put on an expert witness who put himself in the frame of mind of 1990 to 1992, the tax year that issue. And he reported the things that the taxpayers' computer programmers did. And he said they used known computer programming.
Known to somebody, at least.
Well known.
Okay.
Everybody knew how to do this. In addition,
that's something of an overstatement. I'm sure I didn't.
Oh, right. People in the field of computer programming. I apologize, Your Honor. And
now, you know, I appreciate this, and it was a theme in your brief, but it now sounded something like there would be a tax credit if they developed something that were patentable. Because some of these standards, like would somebody skilled in the field have been able to duplicate it and so on? Is it novel, important? It looks like the standards for getting a patent on something. But Section 41 didn't look to me like a reprise of the patent standard.
No, you don't have to get a patent to get a research credit, but you do have to be engaged in scientific or laboratory experimentation. And under this circuit's requirement in United Stationers, you have to expand or refine scientific knowledge. This court has held that these are demanding standards. The tax court below found that they were not met. Unless the court has any further questions.
Would this be, and if you take this into another industry, which I realize doesn't apply, but when you're talking about research and development, there are some things like looking for cures for diseases. They know exactly what they want to do, but they don't know how to do it. Is that the way you have to explore this? That somebody knows what they want to achieve but has no idea how to do it, and it's going to require, I guess, research there's an uncertainty of how to get there, even though you know where you want to go?
If you don't know how to do it, that certainly points in the way of experimentation. If you then, you know, experiment with different alternatives that are...
Does anybody ever get this tax credit?
Does anyone get the tax credit?
I mean, do we have cases we can look at where somebody got it?
I'm not...
Certainly sounds like a hollow law if nobody can use it.
People do get the credit, but I'm not ready to cite, you know, public pronouncement or case.
If they get it, they don't call you, obviously.
Right, I see the cases where it's in dispute.
Right.
And with computer programming, every case has held that the computer programming in that case did not get the credit because the court didn't find that merely debugging a program without something more or engaging in routine methods without something more did not qualify for the credit. But some computer programming does qualify for the credit. Not in this case, however.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Ms. Fowler?
I think Mr. Morrison hit the nail on the head when he said the tax court used the same standard that had been developed by this court in Y-Corps and United Stationers. Unfortunately, that standard that was articulated in those cases is a standard applicable to internal use software and not to the commercial software that was at issue before the tax court. What this court did in United Stationers and in Y-Corps was weave, with respect to the discovery test, they wove the innovation requirement for internal use software into their discussion of the discovery test. That needs to be woven out when we're talking about commercial use software. With respect to the process of experimentation test, this court wove the technical feasibility, the risk of technical feasibility test that's applicable only to internal use software, they wove that into the process of experimentation test. That needs to be woven out with commercial software.
Coming back to my question, where in the statute is this distinction between internal use and sales software? I've now, you know, I downloaded the statute, I've just done a search. There's no mention of internal use anywhere in this statute.
Well, in the legislative history and in all regulations that have been promulgated, there are these additional requirements for internal use software.
Now, these regulations you're referring to, are they in existence now, enforceable now?
In the proposed regulations that were issued in December of 2001, the service said, we will treat all open returns in accordance with these regulations. We've got an open return. We are to be, the service is bound to treat our return exactly like anybody else.
Bound to treat your return.
They said they were.
Well,
that's different from bound. The U.S. attorney says, I don't plan to prosecute violations of crime X, and he then does. The defendant has no right to dismiss the indictment.
Well, they say in the regulations that they...
There are no regulations. There are proposed regulations.
Right. There have been...
There are no legal entitlements under proposed regulations.
In all the regulations that have been promulgated, proposed, we had some final regulations for a period of less than 30 days, and now we have more proposed regulations. But all of those regulations have reflected the legislative history that had new and additional requirements for internal use software. I don't think there's any question about that. So the issue with respect to this appeal and the decision that was made by the tax court is the tax court applied the wrong standard, and this needs to be sent back to the tax court so they can apply the correct standard to the work that was performed by Applied Systems. This is a legal issue, not a factual issue. Any suggestion that the government makes that what Applied Systems did was merely debugging computer programs is belied by the record in this case. Applied Systems started out in 1983 with 6 programmers. In 1990, they had 400 employees. At the time of trial, they had over 1,100 employees. They are the leader in this field. The work that they have done in developing software for independent insurance agents has revolutionized.
Thank you, Ms. Fowler. The case will be taken under advisement.